I'm Audie Cornish, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin is away. It's time now for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, Republican strategist Marcus Skelton, and national columnist for the internet sports blog AOL Fanhouse, Kevin Blackstone, and of course, our NPR political editor, Ken Rudin. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so our regular moderator, Jimmy Israel, is off this week. Michelle is away. I haven't been in a barbershop for like 10 years.
Neither have I.
Okay, good. So I'm just going to jump in and say welcome and take it easy on me. I am the substitute teacher.
Sure.
And topic one, Michael Steele. So it's been another rough week for the Republican committee chairman, and the RNC's chief of staff actually resigned. A high-profile consulting firm severed ties with the organization, and Steele is also catching flack for his response to a question from ABC's George Stephanopoulos about whether he had a, quote, slimmer margin of error as chairman, unquote, because he's black. And here was Steele's response on Good Morning America.
It just is. It's that Barack Obama has a slimmer margin. We all, a lot of folks do. I mean, it's a different role for me to play and others to play. And that's just the reality of it. I mean, that. But you take that as part of the nature of it. My view on politics is much more grassroots oriented. It's not old boy network oriented. And so I tend to, you know, come at it a little bit stronger, a little bit more streetwise, if you will. That's rubbed some feathers the wrong way. At the end of the day, I'm judged by whether I win elections and I raise the money.
Marcus, a lot of folks within the party even took issue with Michael Steele's comment and inferred, you know, use of the race card. And, you know, can he keep taking these hits? Is there a bottoming out here?
Well, I think as long as Michael Steele performs, I don't think there'll be a bottoming out. You know, the most important thing that an RNC chairman can do is win. I think he does have a point. I've been on the National Committee for the Young Republicans. The media does pay a lot of attention to minorities. I wouldn't say that he's being pushed out because of race, but the media does pay more attention when you have an African-American chair in the Republican Party because it's a brand new thing and everybody's getting comfortable with the new conflict. And I think that the issues in the fall are going to be the things that determine if Michael Steele stays there. As long as he's raising the money and getting it to where he needs to be, he'll be fine.
Ken, I know you've got to have some thoughts on this. I mean, it is about the money. And I would say that in the first quarter, not raising more than the Democrats at the height of the health debate isn't necessarily a good sign.
Well, I would have thought that with the anger that's supposed to be out there regarding President Obama, the Republicans would have raised more money than they had. But Marcus is right in the sense that the Republicans did raise a record number, $11.4 million, in the month of March, although the Democrats did outraise them. The thing is look, Howard Dean was a very controversial Democratic chairman, Rahm Emanuel. A lot of Democrats wanted him gone, but he did produce. He produced in 2006. When the Congress, the Democrats won a majority in Congress, and in 2008 when they won back the White House. Now, like Michael Steele, we expect the Republicans to pick up Senate and House seats in November. That's likely to happen. But the last thing the Republicans want is this kind of distraction. They don't like the fact that Michael Steele may say this or that, or the expenditures, or the lesbian bondage club conspiracy.
I don't think it was lesbian bondage specifically. I think it was just a
bondage
nightclub that happened to have a bondage theme.
Well, we could talk about that. I think we should spend the next 20 minutes talking about
right.
that. But the point is,
I like Ken's version better. I got to say,
Ruben is exactly correct. The point is,
just roll with it, baby.
Republicans don't want that distraction, and I think that when his term is up in January, no matter how well or poorly the Republicans do in November, Michael Steele will not be renewed as chairman.
All right. Well, I also want to talk about this issue of Governor Bob McDonnell on Wednesday.
Oh, as Ruben, can I jump in?
Oh, sure, Ruben. You want to jump in on bondage, yeah, on Steele, or on Confederate history?
On Michael
Month?
Steele.
Okay.
Just quickly on Michael Steele. Michael Steele has made mistakes. The number one mistake he's made is that he tends to treat this job as a platform for himself. Look at me. Look at me. It's a substitute for running for office. He's done everything but, you know, cut a rap album to say, look at me. having said that, shame on the Republicans and shame on the Republican Party and shame on all those Republicans who are taking shots at Michael Steele. As I said last week and I'll say again this week, they got more than they bargained for. They wanted a figurehead, someone who could inoculate them, a black chairman they could point to whenever they criticize a black president to say, hey, I'm not racist. Look, I have a black chairman in my party. And instead of a figurehead, they got somebody who actually speaks his mind, who actually reaches out to minorities, who actually challenges the base. So good for him. Shame on them. They wanted him to sit there, be happy, and be black. And that's all they wanted.
Okay.
And he spoke up.
Well, I would just say that, you know, Michael Steele wasn't really the first choice for the GOP. They've been uncomfortable with him ever since he's been there. And really the reason he got the job was because everybody else who was up for the job in the beginning had their own horrific problems and made them really unelectable for that position. And but I would agree with Ruben. It is very much with Michael Steele. I think he's somewhat narcissistic, and they've been very uncomfortable with that. And he hasn't always been on message.
Is there such thing as somewhat narcissistic?
if
you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. It's our weekly barbershop segment, and we're speaking with journalist Ruben Navarrete, Kevin Blackstone, Ken Rudin, and Republican strategist Marcus Skelton. So while we are still looking at the race card, I want to talk about Confederate History Month in Virginia and Governor Bob McDonnell, because first he puts out a proclamation, and then he says, whoops, I'm really sorry, I forgot to mention slavery, that's kind of a bummer, and he's apologized. But, I mean, what do you even say about this? Like, with the Republicans scrambling, like you said, to deal with this thing with Steele, or maybe deal with some kind of implications people have made with the Tea Party at times about race and the Tea Party, I mean, does this kind of compound a bad perception?
Well, look. I don't know why anybody's bringing up slavery. That was such a minor thing with the Civil War.
One of many factors.
A footnote at best. A footnote. Yes, that's right.
Exactly. A P.S. The thing is, yes, Confederate slavery, Confederate Heritage Month has not been observed in Virginia since 2001. But the last time it was observed, Governor Jim Gilmore, a Republican, put in language to talk specific anti-slavery language. When Bob McDonnell decided this week to renew that proclamation, he removed that language. He said that was a distraction. That was not what people cared about. And I think that really hurt him, how he could not see the anger, including from Doug Wilder, who basically was neutral during the last year's election, which helped McDonnell win election. Sheila Johnson of BET was an important backer of Bob McDonnell. She was furious at the fact that she would remove that language, and he didn't see that controversy, and I'm very surprised at that.
Yeah, Ruben, what are your thoughts?
Likewise, you know, I think that as our friend Roland Martin, who's been a guest to the shop before, said yesterday on CNN, you got to represent all of Virginia. You can't just represent white folks in Virginia. When you say that I take out the slavery language because people don't care about that, well, what people are you talking about? You're talking about white Virginians? And the fact that you have to deal with
the
whole
population
is a blind spot.
Well, I don't think he said that people don't care. He said he wanted to focus on issues significant.
Ironically, he called it a distraction. I mean, so what happened in return? A bigger distraction. You know, by virtue of taking it out, it became a bigger distraction. What we have here at the core, though, is a difference between how white Southerners and African Americans nationally see that symbol, the Confederate flag. And if you're a white Southerner, you see it as a symbol of regional pride. It starts, you know, the rebellion, regional pride. It doesn't necessarily connote slavery. But if you're an African American, there's no other way to read it. So that, at the core of it, is this basic divide. And a more sensitive and more forward-thinking leader would have figured that out.
And it's also a constant discussion in Virginia, right, Marcus?
Absolutely.
I mean, this is not new. He should have seen it coming.
Right. And I definitely think I listened to President Obama's remarks today, and I think he was right on point with saying that the omission, of course, was a dumb idea. But it's a bigger conversation of how racism and the Civil War is still emotional issues in this country. And it's just funny sometimes in politics to see which battles they take and which battles they don't. I mean, you look at Michael Steele right now, and no one's jumping to save. I don't see the Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson rally to go keep Michael Steele in office. I don't see that right now. But it's funny how it works. But Democrat, Republican, it's still an issue that we need to work with. We all need to figure out where our past success and failures are in American history, and what do we do now with our past, and how do we react and trust each other. And the president was right on how he framed that argument.
Well, Marcus, you better be careful, brother. As soon as he gets back to the RNC that you're agreeing with the president, you'll be out by dinner.
Well, it seems to me the minute that you mention the word Confederate, you've hit a red button issue. And
right. Said it was the celebration for the War of Northern Aggression, which is what people said in Tennessee, where I live.
And the ultimate intelligent way to approach it would be to call it the Civil War History Month, where you could examine both sides of the issue and bring everybody into the conversation.
All right, this leaves us plenty of time for obviously the most important news going on this week, Tiger Woods at Augusta, and the world's number one golfer, Tiger Woods, back on the links at the Masters Tournament. Now, this is the first time he's played competitively since his infidelity scandal and unfortunate car accident in Thanksgiving. And
he was playing competitively then, too.
He was. And here's a clip of him on Monday talking about his new approach to golf.
I'm actually going to try and obviously not get as hot when I play. But then again, when I'm not as hot, I'm not going to be as exuberant either. I can't play one without the other. I made a conscious decision to try and tone down, you know, my negative outbursts. And you know, consequently, I'm sure that my positive outbursts will be calmed down as well. And just try to be more respectful of the game.
And Tiger, he seemed to pick up right where he left off before the scandal. He had the best opening round score he's ever posted at the Masters. And I know you're all anxious to talk about this, but there's one more clip I have to play. And this is the Nike ad that debuted Wednesday on ESPN. And I just want to give people the image here who are not lucky enough to have seen it, if that's possible. picture Tiger Woods with his trademark cap. Black and white image staring directly into the camera, soulfully, I think. And it's narrated by Tiger's late father, Earl Woods.
Tiger, I am more prone to be inquisitive, to promote discussion. I want to find out what your thinking was. I want to find out what your feelings are. And did you learn anything?
All right, Kevin, you're a sports expert, and I want to get to the golf, but the commercial. I mean, what is your take? Just creepy? Thoughtful?
Thoughtful, not at all. Creepy, absolutely.
And the voice they got from a DVD biography with Earl Woods'
right,
voice
been
on it
dead
from 2004.
Since, I think, right, and he's been dead since 2006.
Yeah.
Very odd, but Nike knew what they were doing. You know, at the end of the day, Tiger Woods is all about marketing. Even at his press conference the other day, he talked about how he hoped to get back into good graces with sponsors. You know, here's a guy who was earning $100 million a year away from golf, becoming you know, the first billionaire athlete. And at the end of the day, that's really what he's always about. And if you look back to the very first Nike commercial that Tiger did, the one in which Tiger and Nike colluded to portray Tiger as some type of transformative racial figure in America, you know, he didn't have any designs really to be that. He hasn't been that, and he won't be that. But it was all about attracting this new audience of people of color who otherwise hadn't paid attention to golf, hadn't bought golf gear, hadn't bought golf tickets, to get them involved in this commercial enterprise, Tiger Woods, Inc. And that is really, to me, what he is out to repair.
Anyone else, Ken?
I agree with Kevin completely. The sadness is, of course, is that perhaps maybe we could stop talking about the affairs and stop talking about race and start talking about him as a phenomenal golfer. I mean, when I look at Kobe Bryant, when I look at Jason Kidd, they've had things in their past involving women that were less than honorable,
yeah.
But sometimes you'd like to see them perform.
Which I have to say is why I don't care about this story, because to me, these people always make a comeback. I really haven't seen a situation where people have said like, oh no, we really, yeah. Kobe, sorry, we just don't want. I mean, they always come back. Like, what is everyone worried about?
But not even.
It's also, well, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, but not, you know, it's not only in sports. I mean, just, you know, you turn on the television now and who do you see as a commentator but the former governor of New York, who was just on yesterday.
Right.
So these bounce backs happen everywhere and not just in
Newt
sports.
Gingrich, too. Newt Gingrich.
Quickly, exactly. You know, this is a remarkable spot. This is a remarkable spot because Nike has doubled down on the scandal instead of just sort of running away from the scandal. It's in your face. They've said, we're going to make something out of the scandal. We're going to put it right out there again and use a dead man's voice to do it. It is remarkably bold on the part of Nike. They got exactly what they were looking for. They got all this press because of it. But I agree, it is creepy, but I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, though these are the folks who brought us Charles Barkley's ad, I'm not a role model. I don't know if you remember all that.
Right,
so they're
exactly
in keeping with the theme.
Right, and it's definitely, they're trying to set up the cinema of the Tiger Woods comeback, the voice of his father talking to him. It seems like a Oscar-winning film ready. But I think what you're seeing is Tiger's more focused. All the other stuff he used to do on his free time, you know, if an accountant used to go to the bar at night and now he's in trouble, he's not going to the bar no more. He's going to stay more focused on work because he can't go anywhere else. So you're going to actually probably see Tiger Woods get better at golf because his only out is going to be, honey, I'm going to the golf course.
So we have just 2 minutes left. I mean, does that mean he needs to win the Masters to really fully restore the image?
No, look.
It would help.
But think of Muhammad Ali. I mean, he was out for a long time. 1971, he comes back, loses to Joe Frazier. He didn't have to win that race, that fight. It would have been nice if he did, but he didn't. But his greatness was in years to come. So even if Woods doesn't win this year, he still has other opportunities to win and return to greatness.
Though I'm not holding out on that as a comparison. I'm sorry. It doesn't work for me.
And I think golf is different. You don't win every single golf tournament. As long as you place in the top five of every golf tournament, you're a legend in golf. And Tiger's already, I think, about a handful of majors away from becoming a legend, more than he is now in golf. So I think he's still on pace to do that.
Ruben, we got a minute
left. Appearances, it looks like the big difference between Muhammad Ali and Tiger Woods is one man had character and the other doesn't. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, the tantrums, the throwing of the golf club, you know, and talk about being narcissistic.
Right.
The worst things you can say about Tiger that showed up in the scandal was not the infidelity, but just the me of how he approaches his life. And that ultimately is going to go and going to be his enduring legacy. No matter how good a golfer he is, he's got to take that with him.
Yeah, and it's not so clear from this ad or this week if much of that has really changed. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from San Diego. Kevin Blackstone, a national columnist for the internet sports blog AOL Fanhouse and a panelist on ESPN Around the Horn. Marcus Gelton is a Republican strategist as well as grants advisor for Higher Education Association in Washington, D.C. And Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. They were all kind enough to join us from our Washington studios. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Ruben, that me. I didn't know you were involved in the opera.
I tune up.
And that's our program for today. Michelle Martin returns next week. I'm Audie Cornish, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.